This episode of Reality Life with Kate Casey is brought to you in part by Milk. Keep listening to discover how Milk adds more to your day. Now, here's the show.
The amazing Kate Casey.
Welcome back to another episode of Reality Life with Kate Casey. Hope that you guys have had a great week. Please tell me that you're watching American Idol. Last night's episode had what they teased in commercials, and I believe to be the best audition in the show's history. Alejandro Aranda is 24 years old, a dishwasher from Pomona, California, walks into the room with his guitar, with a hat on and really large clothes, extremely soft-spoken, explains that he was homeschooled, he just learned to play music 4 years ago, and then goes on to play his own song on the guitar. He was unbelievable. You should have seen Luke Bryan's face. If you did see it, you know what I'm talking about. They were all just mesmerized by this young man. And then Lionel Richie said, I just don't want you to stop playing. I understand you play the piano. Do you want to go over and play something? So Alejandro told him, well, I haven't played for a bit, but sure, I can go ahead. So he sits down at the piano and plays as if he's like a concert pianist. Unbelievable. So he stands up. He's just the shyest guy. Apparently, he told Ryan Seacrest he didn't even think he was qualified enough to audition for the show. And they're looking at him like, not only are you going to win this show, you're going to be a huge star. Like, you're on another level. It basically reminded me of that movie Good Will Hunting. He's like the Good Will Hunting of music. And they asked him, who are your musical heroes? And he said, Trent Reznor, Chopin, and Bach. Like, this guy's legit. And I love that he's just this dishwasher. I can't stop thinking about the music, and this never happens to me. My husband's packing for a trip for this weekend, and I kept following him around the room. I said, Dan, you have to listen to this guy. He's like, you're borderline obsessed, especially since he never really hears me say that about music. I said, you have to watch this. So we sat there and watched it, and he's like, wow, the guy's really good. I cannot believe that he just learned to play music 4 years ago. And I watched it with my kids last night, and they were just as excited about him as well. So I hope this guy's a big star. Go to his Instagram. I believe it's Scary Pool Party. He's really just, it's spectacular. Also, that episode is pretty funny because they had a girl try out, and some of these people oversell themselves. And she said that she was a singer-songwriter, and she sang this song that she made up about Amazon Prime. And even my son, who's 7, was like, is she for real? Like, she's really singing about getting a box on her doorstep. So it was a great episode. The Bachelor, it's almost coming to an end for this season. This is the season with the Virgin Bachelor and the Instagram content creator batch of contestants. So I've been thinking about it a lot this season. I think that they need to update the show. And here's some of my ideas. So instead of having the girls get out of a limo, I think that they should introduce each contestant by showing video footage that was obtained by a private investigator in the weeks before filming began. I just feel like this way we can learn so much more about someone. Having them followed, you know, from the gym or while eating food at a mall food court, I just feel like we would learn much more about the contestants. I also believe that they should say to the contestants, listen, if you're signing up from the show, you have to agree to stay off social media until 1 year after the season finale airs. So we can really weed out the people who want to find love or from the ones who just want to sell, I don't know, like tummy tea. The contestants should also meet the Bachelor in bright daylight instead of having them go to that mansion where they have them show up at like 11 o'clock at midnight and they hose spray the driveway so it looks all sleek. I think they should do it in bright daylight because it's going to be like that in life. You know, when you're married, when you roll over and you wake up and somebody has morning breath and they've got crap in their eyes and their hair's disgusting. I mean, that is really marriage for you. And maybe instead of emerging from a limo, maybe you get out like on a pogo stick or you're wearing like a Target uniform with name tags on. I also believe they should eliminate that background piano music when a couple's having a serious conversation and maybe instead have a man standing behind them with like a black outfit on and a beret, but playing the flute. I just think it'll mix up. Maybe interview some former ex-boyfriends. Super helpful for really understanding more about what a person's real desires are. maybe some more realistic dating scenarios, including like how to buy for a family of five with a limited budget at Costco. I think also like less helicopters and luxury cars for one-on dates, maybe something like go-karts or something. Hometown dates where the bachelor's forced to ask their parents for the hand in marriage. I think we should do that maybe while the parents and the bachelor are eating like plates of noodles, but they can only eat with one chopstick while they're eating. And I also believe that they should have less hometown dates where the relatives are forced to sit around a table in a rented location while pretending to eat dinner. Because most of these meals, you can tell by the clocks that they forget to take down in the contestants' houses, are held really late at night. And they're actually not allowed to eat. So you're just kind of watching them sit around a table. So I'm going to say do some more of those hometown dates, but have a more realistic experience with the family. And do that by having them showcase their town with an Olympic-inspired torch race with all participants wearing 80s tracksuits. And even get the grandparents in like motorized little, you know, vehicles to take part in the race. I also think that the bachelor should announce his final two picks in the form of a love ballad while wearing an ice skating costume. I just feel like it's just going to make things a little bit more interesting. I also believe, and this is like my most important thing, is I think that the final two picks should be given a file containing the bachelor's financial and voting records of the last 4 years so that they can review it. And then they're given the option to take either a cash payout or to await their engagement decision. So it's like, take the money, or you can hang around to see if you're the final two. You have to do it to the final two. You can't say to the last person, because I feel like you do run the risk of, you know, he might not even propose to me and I might not get cash. So what am I going to get at all? So I just feel like that might be a better use of everyone's time. And just, I think it's time to, you know, mix it up and change the show up a little bit. I'm looking forward to the newest bachelorette. And I think that they, since they had this bachelor that was a virgin, we're going to fully expect that the new season will have way more making out, because I think that kind of backfired for the producers. This week's episode, so happy about. Do you know when you interview somebody or talk to somebody and you're like, why weren't we friends like 15 years ago? I felt that way about Jamie Otis, who's been on The Bachelor and Married at First Sight. She's awesome. I think you guys are really going to love her. She appeared on the 16th season of The Bachelor. That was the one with Ben, who worked at a winery. Not the most interesting guy of all the Bachelors that they've chosen. So she was on that show, but she's most known for participating in the very first season of Married at First Sight. And that's where she met her husband, Doug. And then the couple was later featured in a spinoff series called Married at First Sight the first year. She does a lot of the interviews with the couples that are participating on Married at First Sight. And so she talks about what it's like to be a contestant on The Bachelor, what it's like to be on Married at First Sight, why she thinks her marriage lasted, but then goes a lot into her life. And I know that for those of you who have experienced fertility issues, you're going to really appreciate the way that she's so open about her fertility journey. I also got a chance to talk to the director of the Bill Murray stories, Life Lessons Learned from a Mythical Man. I loved this film. If you love Bill Murray, if you're a Saturday Night Live fan, you must watch this. And then Brandon Alvarado is hilarious, and he's been watching the Lindsay Lohan Beach Club. And so I had to check back into that show because I watched the premiere and then I tapped out for a little bit and I had to catch myself up because he said, you're really missing out. This show is bananas. So we catch up on the show. Apparently it's tanking in the ratings, which doesn't exactly surprise me. But you're going to love Brandon just as much as I do. So here we go. You guys know I'm crazy about Audible because it offers an incredible selection of audiobooks across every genre. As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog, including the latest bestsellers and new releases. Audible really is the destination for thrilling audio entertainment. With female writers and heroines, celebrity narration, multicast productions with immersive sound design, and traditional audiobooks, Audible has you covered for any type of excitement that you're looking for. In fact, right now I'm listening to The Second Husband by Kate White. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/realitylife or text realitylife to 500-500. That's audible.com/realitylife or text realitylife to 500-500. Jamie Otis appeared as a contestant on the 16th season of The Bachelor. She's most well known for participating in the first season of Married at First Sight, where she met her husband, Doug. And the couple was later featured in a spinoff series, Married at First Sight, the first year. They have since appeared in several specials on FYI. She is an author. Welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm so happy to be here.
I would love for you to tell people a little bit about your life before The Bachelor.
Okay, so before The Bachelor, I grew up in upstate New York, and I grew up in like different trailer parks and apartment buildings. And my mom, I've never known who my father is. I've had 4 paternity tests, and they're all negative. So I've always just been like wondering who my father could be. And my mom, she had a real rough life because she had 5 kids like yourself. Yeah, it's tough. And so, in hindsight, so of course, at the time, I was really bitter to my mom because she developed a drug addiction, and she just really wasn't present for us. And I really didn't get it at the time because I was young, I was a kid. And so to me, it was just like my mom was neglecting me and didn't love me, didn't care about me. In reality, I think she was just trying to cope with, she had gone through extensive, domestic violence. I mean, my stepdad was in and out of jail all the time for beating her up. And so long story short, I ended up gaining custody of my siblings when I was a freshman in college. And my mom was just, she was trying to be a mom, but she didn't really know how to be a mom. She was really struggling with the addiction. And so I just took care of my siblings, and we ended up going, through court battles and whatnot. But essentially, I ended up getting custody of my siblings and took care of them while I was in college and while they were in, finishing out high school. And then I see a commercial for The Bachelor, and my friend said, oh, you should try that. And so I went to thebachelor.com or something and submitted myself for The Bachelor, and the rest is history. They actually, I was like, you want me, the girl from the trailer park? Like, what?
You did not know that Ben was going to be The Bachelor when you signed up for the show.
I kind of knew, because there's like this whole time before getting on The Bachelor that they are in communication with you, and they fly you out to LA for like the final casting, and they say, how do you feel about Ben? And honestly, I like JP from that seat. So it was after Ashley Hebert was the bachelorette, it was one of her bachelors that was going to become The Bachelor. And at that point, it wasn't known yet that she had chosen JP. And I thought JP was just so sweet, and he is, he's such a doll. And I was like, I liked JP, but I also I didn't necessarily I wasn't exactly like totally into Ben, but I was like, yeah, sure. I mean, I was 23. I was a baby. To me, this was like a whole different world. And I was like, if I get the chance to fall in love with any man on TV, like that sounds like a fairy tale. And so for me, it was just, and also I was like, I had been so not sheltered, because obviously I wasn't sheltered at all, but I was so serious about studying nursing and getting my degree and taking care of my siblings. But this was the first time I was able to kind of like let loose and just do something adventurous and fun. And of course I genuinely wanted to fall in love, which is quite naive of me at the time. But again, I was 23 and had never like experienced the world. So, I think if they would have said it was like Joe Schmo, I would have been like, okay, let's give this a shot.
So when you get to the house, what was your experience living inside that house?
Oh my God. So I think I should have been more confident in myself, but inevitably I still was the girl from the trailer park, and I still, if there was a hometown date, I would have no parents to introduce this man to. Like I would be taken back to my trailer park, and I'm like, what would we do? Play board games with my sisters?
So you're on the show, and I know that you've said that you've barely spent any time with Ben. I want you to tell everybody kind of about what you have said, that the producers encouraged you to talk about your complicated family life in a scene.
Yeah. So, well, I think they were just encouraging me to open up, period, because I was so shy. I really didn't feel like I belonged there. And somehow Ben kept giving me a rose, maybe because I don't know. I have no idea why he kept on giving me a rose. Sometimes I think maybe it was the producers just telling, like, you know, being like, just give her a rose. She's going to open up. Or maybe he did like me. I have no idea. This is more than halfway into the season, and I've barely said like 10 words to the man. Like, I'm just so, I've only ever been on the group dates. I had never been on a one-on-one. And I was just like, you know, like, I'm not the kind of girl that's going to be like, you know, barging in on him, kissing some other girl to be like, excuse me, your time is up. It's my time now. Like, I'm just not that girl. And so, you know, I just never did that. And he was, you know, I think he was a little confused, like, why I wasn't more aggressive and assertive towards him. But like, that's just not who I am. And I wasn't going to pretend to be someone I'm not. So long story short, you know, the producers were like, you know, it's more than halfway through the season, but there's not a lot of time left. If you're serious about this, you really need to open up. And opening up, I took that as like two things. And it really is like two things in The Bachelor. You either get deep and intimate and share, like, you know, an intimate story about your life, or, you know, like, open up and share a little bit of yourself with him, or, you know, you can just like make out with him and show him your interest that way. And I was like, well, I'm definitely not telling him anything about my past. I don't think he's going to think that's cool that I'm living in a trailer park and my mom's a drug addict. And I have no idea who my father is. So I better make out with him. Like, I better like kiss him if I, you know, like, I want to see if this could work. And so I literally have two double shots of like vodka soda waters before, like, within like literally 20 minutes. Like, so that's like four shots of vodka. And I was just like totally wasted, which is like so embarrassing to admit out loud. But I, you know, I tried seducing him and showing him my interest in him, which was really quite a mess. I was literally like on the most recent like recap of like all the moments in The Bachelor history, I was number one most awkward kiss. So, I mean, at least I have that going for me. I go on The Bachelor. That was really a disaster. I was very awkward and number one worst awkward kisser ever. So that was only an embarrassment. And then they say, you know, there's a show called The Bachelor Pad, which happened before Bachelor in Paradise. And they say, oh, we'd like you to come out for that. And, you know, I'm like, okay, this could be a good opportunity. I don't know. Like, maybe I'll find love. I still think I'm going to find love, which is interesting because it's just so naive. But anyways, I was like really open to it. And also, you know, like the adventure and all of the fun of it. And so I go, even though I was kind of hesitant in the sense that like, I didn't want to embarrass myself again. And long story short, I end up in like a love triangle with, his name's Chris and a couple other girls. Well, one other girl in particular, he was just kind of playing both of us. And I didn't really realize that he was playing me as well. Like, I thought we had like this secret, great relationship. And then at the very end, I realized, no, like I didn't sleep with him. And I feel like that's pretty much why, like, he wasn't interested in me. Like, I don't know. So then, you know, I get back from the bachelor pad and I moved to Manhattan and I work at Columbia Presbyterian as a labor and delivery nurse. I'm a registered nurse. And I, like, to me, this is like, I mean, this is like, to me, this is where I've made it. Like, I worked really hard to become a labor and delivery nurse. And it's not easy to get your nursing degree, first of all. But second of all, to get into labor and delivery is very, it's a specialized field. It's very hard to get into. And here I am again, like this trailer park girl. My mom, you know, was unemployed most of my life. Sometimes she worked at a gas station or like Taco Bell. But like, for me, I was like, wow, I'm working at this prestigious hospital in labor and delivery. Like, wow, I felt so good about myself. And I was like, this is great. The only thing that was missing in my life was true love. Like, I was in Manhattan, which I thought was so cool. Like, I made it out of my small town, but I was just still looking for true love. And I was quite awkward dating, you know, any guy I was dating. I always had this like terrible insecurity, not only now from, you know, having a drug addict mom and not knowing my father and living in a trailer park growing up and all that. But like, now it's like, okay, now I don't know if the guys I'm dating have seen The Bachelor or have seen like the YouTube clip. So like, are they going to pick on me for like this, you know, this awkward experience I had on TV. And so just so effing awkward dating and just uncomfortable. And all I really wanted was true love in a family this whole often time. So randomly I get a phone call from someone who says that they're casting a show called The Love Experiment. And the experiment would be that you know, they analyze you scientifically. So like there's a psychologist and you fill out multiple different questionnaires and they analyze who you are among a bunch of other people in the tri-state area. And if you if you like match up perfectly scientifically with another person, then they would put you together and then they would kind of assist you while dating. And I was like, oh my God, that's what I need in life. Like, I need someone to like help me figure out me and help me figure out how to be a good partner. So anyways, long story short, we get to the final casting and they say, oh, it's actually not dating. You're actually going to get married to the stranger.
Oh my gosh.
And you're not going to know anything about this person, but trust us that they'll be a perfect match for you because we're doing all the scientific background analyzing on you and everybody. And we're not going to just throw anyone together. So if you don't get a perfect match, you don't get to get married. But if we find someone that we think is perfect for you, we are going to, you know, you're going to get married to that person and it's all going to be documented. But we're going to these experts will all be there to help you throughout the process. I sat throughout their whole spiel about like what this is about. And the experts were all there. So you got to meet these people and they weren't just like reality people. It wasn't like The Bachelor in the sense that it was so like dramatized. It seemed so genuine. Like these people, like they genuinely wanted to see if they could change the statistic of 50-50, you know, in America, marriages are 50-50. It's either 50% stay married, 50% get divorced. And they were hoping to see if maybe if we did this whole arranged marriage and based it on science, if that statistic could be a bit more improved.
A lot of people wanted to know, you know, you're infamous for saying in the first episode that you weren't attracted to him.
I had a hard time believing that I was worthy of love for a very, very long time. And I think that my reaction at our wedding day, which also I tend to have these very crazy reactions, I guess, but you know what it was, is you're in your wedding dress and I really hyped this up. I was like, wow, this could be the love of my life. This is going to be amazing. I don't expect to be like smitten, but like I expected like butterflies or, you know, a little bit of chemistry. If I saw him, like a little bit of like something to be like, yeah, like there's a connection, but there was literally nothing when we locked eyes for the first time. Like I did not feel any chemistry. There was no butterflies. There was nothing like, oh, like I, you know, there was just nothing about it that made me feel like, yes, I should marry this man. But then I'm there in my wedding dress and my bridesmaids had walked down, my flower girl had walked down, like everyone's there staring at me. And I just kind of like, I don't know, panicked. And I was like, wait a minute, like, I don't want to get married, you know, to someone that I don't think I'm genuinely going to be in love with and like be able to make this work. Then again, I'd only seen him for literally 1 minute. And like, I'm making this assumption and like basically throwing our whole relationship away off of 1 minute of basically fear. Really, I was terrified of marrying a stranger. Like, I mean, it was just I took it all very, very seriously. If I had just stayed closed-minded that day, and if I hadn't opened my heart and my mind to this man, I would have missed out on the most loving, generous, patient, kind soul. And he's literally the love of my life. And I don't even know. I mean, to think that like there are people out there who want me to go on a blind date or maybe have their first date and they have no chemistry or connections, that they just chalk it up as nothing. It's so sad to me because it's like, oh my God, give the guy another chance or give the girl another chance, because just because you don't have it the first day does not mean that it does not. I mean, I think the best love is the love that grows. And so for Doug and I, you know, my husband and I, we obviously had nothing on our wedding day. There was no love. There was no attraction. There was nothing but like fear. And slowly but surely, he was patient and just, you know, kind and generous and just really just like let me have my space. And I started realizing all these great qualities in him. And I slowly, you know, started to fall in love with him. And really, I mean, the butterflies were by our honeymoon. I mean, I was like, oh my God, this guy is so amazing. It just took a little bit more time. So to anybody out there who is struggling to find love, this is my message to you. Give the guy or the girl that you don't have an immediate attraction to, give them a second chance, because you never know what will come.
You've been really open about your fertility journey.
So, well, this is the thing, is when we first lost our firstborn son, Jonathan, at 17 weeks in 1 day. And I was in such a deep, dark pit. I couldn't even leave the house. I mean, I just couldn't fathom having this sweet boy bouncing around inside me one day. And then the next day he's in my hands sleeping, you know, he's in heaven already. Like, but I see him and he's perfectly formed with his beautiful little, you know, fingers, his little button nose. I mean, he was a baby in my arms that I wasn't able to protect and nurture within me. And I just couldn't get past that and hated it. I hated it with a passion. And I hated that. And I hated that he wasn't in me anymore. And I hated that it was all taken from me. I hated that his life, he would never get the chance for me to rock him and kiss him and tell him everything's going to be okay, or to laugh and bounce on my lap. Like, I just hated it all. And I was just so miserable about it. And, the only way that I could find relief, because it was, you know, people are so awkward when you go through a loss that they don't know what to say. And I get that. I totally get that. And I knew that, you know, I knew that it was uncomfortable for people to talk about because no one ever talks about it. So no one knows what to say. And I was like, you know, if no one knows what to say, I still needed a release. I had no one to talk to. I didn't know that this had happened to so many women before, you know, like, to me, I felt so alone in it. So I just started blogging, and I haven't blogged so much as I did back then, because that was like my therapy, like first of all, I didn't want him to just be lost and forgotten in translation, like, because he was no longer with us on earth, that his life didn't matter, because his life did matter. And yeah. I promised him that I would never just forget about him and just let the whole world forget about him. Like, he mattered. And we loved him. His mommy and daddy loved him so much, even though he wasn't able to be, you know, in the crib, in the nursery, or in the rocker, or, you know, on our lap. And so I just started blogging about just really all my feelings. And that was like my only way out. And I started realizing that women started writing me back a lot, sharing their stories, and that they had never shared their stories before of their different losses. I mean, all sorts of different terrible stories of, you know, going to full term and having a whole nursery set up just to have your baby stillborn, you know, just terrible, excruciating stories that have happened also. And they had never had the chance to talk about it because it's so taboo. And it's so, you know, it's almost like frowned upon to talk about in public, because it's just like no one knows what to say. So it's just this uncomfortable, fearful thing to talk about. And I was like, wow, like this, look, like all these women have gone through such excruciating things and they haven't been able to even heal from it. They aren't able to honor their baby because other people feel offended by them sharing about their baby. Like, that is so wrong. And so my own personal thing was that I'm not waiting. You know, first of all, we were in our second trimester when we lost our firstborn son, Jonathan. So we were supposed to be in the clear, you know, everything was supposed to be great. And then all of a sudden, no, it's not great. And you're not going to have a viable pregnancy. So my thing was like, you know what? I love when I get pregnant, like, I'm so excited about this baby. I love this baby. The minute I find out, I'm going to honor this baby, you know, from the moment I find out I'm pregnant. And so that's what I did when we were pregnant with our rainbow baby. Earlier, like when I was in my first trimester, we announced it almost like it was very scary for me to announce it, because I was very scared of having a second loss. But I almost like wanted to do it for all the women out there who love their babies at 6, 7, 8 weeks pregnant, and like have to like keep it hidden because it's so taboo to share before the second trimester. And then they have to go through the loss all by themselves all the time. It's so wrong that these women have to go through such excruciating pain and then show up at their office, you know, or show up as a teacher or show up as a nurse the next day and just do their job and with a smile on their face, because no one knows what they just suffered through. If you choose to announce your pregnancy at whatever stage of your pregnancy, that is okay, because you deserve the love and support throughout your whole entire pregnancy, not just when it's, you know, socially acceptable to announce your pregnancy.
So you guys have been also open about the most recent miscarriage. So you announced it was like a Christmas podcast, correct? It was like the Christmas Eve.
Yeah,
right? I was listening to that, and then
It was Christmas Day. We have like, we always give like a present to all of our, we call them our friends, our friends who are our fans. Like, I don't know, I think fans is so like distant and informal. And I'm like, if you're our fan, like, you're really our friend. If you're supporting us and loving us, you're our friend. We love you. So we call them our friends. And we always give them a present on Christmas Day. Like, either it's like a YouTube video or something that we could just give them virtually that everyone can, you know, they can have. And so this year we already knew we were going to share, you know, have a podcast for them where we could like connect with them a bit more intimately. But we didn't know when we planned the podcast that I would be pregnant. And so we were like, oh my gosh, that would be the best Christmas present ever for everyone. We can share this pregnancy. And so that's what we did. We shared that we were pregnant, this most recent pregnancy, on the podcast. And, you know, and I was so certain that this baby, because I had just suffered a chemical pregnancy as well. So I was like, oh, not a chance. I just felt, I remember when we found out we were pregnant, I was like, I told my husband, I'm like, oh, I just know this is a good pregnancy. I felt it in my soul somehow, which is like very weird because I thought I was connected to myself a bit better than this, but I genuinely believe that this pregnancy, I don't know, I kind of thought it was going to be a boy. And I kind of thought that, you know, for sure that, you know, my daughter was going to be a big sister. Like I was just, I had all these like feelings about this pregnancy. And then, you know, I started spotting a little bit. And of course, everyone says, oh, don't worry about it. That happens. And I'm like, I know that happens. I'm a nurse, but like, I was still terrified. And, you know, slowly the spotting just kind of, it never really was like crazy bleeding or anything crazy like that. It was just a little spotting for a couple weeks. And we went in to go make sure that everything was okay. And there was no heartbeat. And, you know, I, of course, was like devastated. And this is the thing, is that I think that what I've found is if we hold these hard times, whether it be, you know, a pregnancy loss or infant loss, or maybe even like any sort of hard time, you know, a struggle within your marriage or whatever the case may be, if we hold those in and don't talk about it and don't share it, not only do we feel alone, but the other people who are suffering with the same exact struggles, they feel alone as well. And we're not helping anybody. We're not helping ourselves. Right. We're not helping someone else.
This is what's weird. Okay. So it's 10:49. I took a picture of my daughter at 8:27 this morning. And I take a picture of her at school. It's her side profile. And she has a ponytail in and it's got bunny ears. And there's a cross in the background. At about 8:35, I start listening to an episode of yours, and you said in the episode that you see bunnies when there's a sign. I'm going to text you this picture. It is
that's
like,
crazy.
I'm sorry that there is some sort of coincidence. There's a message there. I don't know, but it's bizarre. It's a side profile of my daughter, the bunnies with a cross right next to it.
I kid you not. Like on the anniversary of Jonathan, that's our firstborn son who, you know, is no longer with us, on the anniversary of his death, I was just, or like when I delivered him, you know, like, I guess they call it angelversary. I'm still getting like, I don't really know, but I try to honor him. And so the day that he, you know, on his birthday, I guess his angelversary, whatever you call it, I was just like saying to my husband, like, just give me a sign. Like, is it important that I honor you still? Like, is it like, I don't know, like, are you really with us? Like, I don't know. Like sometimes I feel a little nutty that I really want, I mean, I planted a tree in his honor because I really didn't want his life to be forgotten. And then I'm like, am I crazy though for that? Like, I don't know. And so I literally said to my husband, I just want a sign from him that like, yes, he really is up in heaven and we are going to meet again one day. Like I'm not nutty. And I kid you not, I went and like for a drive, I don't remember where my father-in-law and I were going, but we were going to someplace and on the drive, I kid you not, I saw a bunny just hopping on someone's front yard.
Ay, crazy. Well, so you and Doug have a new podcast, which is great. I highly recommend it for everybody. You also do a bunch of filming. Well, people want to know, is this guy Luke on Married at First Sight right now? Like the biggest jackass that ever lived or what?
Okay. So we actually just did an interview for Entertainment Tonight. And of course, that's like the number one question we ever get is, you know, what is going on with Luke? Like, is this real? And, you know, my husband was very blatant on our last podcast episode of Hot Marriage Co-Parents. He just called it out and he said he thinks Luke is a dick, like, which my husband doesn't ever say anything negative stuff about anybody, yeah. But Luke has been so
awful.
Like, yeah, he's just been really quite awful to his wife, Kate. And regardless of, you know, any circumstances, she has really done nothing. So there's not even any reason for this type of behavior for her. Like she's done nothing but supportive and loving and like patient with him. And then he says like awful, hurtful things to her, like after they kiss. And it's just really sad. Like he says he feels dead inside after they make out. Like that's just a terrible thing to say to a woman. Even if you do feel that way, you don't have to say it. Like, and so that's why my husband feels like he's just such a jerk. But, you know, I host a show called Married at First Sight Unfiltered on Lifetime. So it's an after show for Married at First Sight. So I get to sit down and chat with these couples. And I've chatted with Luke multiple times on Unfiltered. And part of me, you know, when you meet him in person, you're like, you can't really be this mean. Like, he doesn't come off as a mean man. Like, he seems like a nice guy. So I'm like, you know what? At the end of the day, playing devil's advocate here, hurt people hurt people. I think for him, his wounds, like, just came to a head the minute he said, I do. And he's taking it out on his wife, which is not okay. But
he's awful.
I don't know. I don't know what else to say.
What do you think about John, who was paired up with Molly, now finding love with Jen? I say, you never know where you're going to find love. So if it ended up that he found love with the therapist, who cares? Like, they're happy in the end. Why not?
Yeah. You know, I think that's a very sticky situation, because I 100% agree with you when you say that, you know, I married a complete stranger, so who am I to judge how anybody finds love? I think that with the fact that she was an expert though on the show, there is a little bit of uncertainty. Like, I would have been, maybe my best advice would have been just keep it private, your relationship, because it doesn't come off as super professional. And I know, but this is the thing, is Dr. Jessica, she is very, very professional. She is a great woman. She's incredibly intelligent and very helpful to the couples. So, you know, so there's that, but I think that it does leave a bad taste in people's mouths. Like, I gotta be honest, like if my husband and I didn't work out and then Jessica and him ended up hooking up or something, I don't know how I feel about that.
People can read your book. It's called Wifey 101. They can go to your website, jamieotis.com. You guys are in LA now. And then tell everybody how they can find you on social media.
Yeah. So my handle is Jamie N. Otis. And that's on literally Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. And I'm active every single day. I love chatting with you guys. So if you send a comment saying that you heard this podcast, you know, then I'll be sure to reach back out to you and say hello. But yeah, so they can find me at Jamie N. Otis on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook. And my website, like you said, is jamieotis.com. And our podcast is Hot Marriage Co-Parents.
With 4 daughters and 2 on a dance team, I can tell you we go through a lot of mascara in my house. But I'm crazy about L'Oreal Paris new Panorama Mascara, which catches every lash from corner to corner for maximum volume. If you're looking for a new high-end mascara without breaking the bank, this is yours. The new L'Oreal Paris Panorama Mascara gives you a high-end lash look in a premium gold luxe packaging. I've been using it for about 2 weeks now, and I feel like my eye has completely opened up, and the girls are crazy about it too. They've got a tapered brush to catch every lash, one of the best mascara wands that I've ever used. And like I said, this luxe appearance of this gold package, you got to get it. You can buy Panorama Mascara on Amazon today. L'Oreal Paris new Panorama Mascara. You're going to love it.
Tommy Avalone is the director of one of my new favorite obsessions. There is a fantastic Netflix film called The Bill Murray Stories, Life Lessons Learned from a Mythical Man. Tommy, tell me how you came upon creating this project.
Oh, thank you. So I started hearing these Bill Murray stories. They were really popular in 2012. Doing karaoke, playing kickball. It was all around that time. And I just thought these stories would be really, really interesting if they were done in a Bigfoot documentary kind of way. But I just was super interested in the idea of Bill and doing these stories and wondering why someone would actually do that.
For people that are not don't know of Bill Murray, he first gained exposure on Saturday Night Live, and he has been in a ton of really great movies: Meatballs, Caddyshack, Stripes, Tootsies, Ghostbusters, Scrooge, Ghostbusters 2, What About Bob, Groundhog Day, Quick Change, St. Vincent, tons of movies. And he's such a character, because tell them a little bit, this is such a great story about how he doesn't have an agent and he just has this answering machine.
Yeah, so like he had an agent back in the day. It was Mike Ovitz, and when Mike Ovitz left CAA to work for Disney, he kind of had these other agents at CAA. He's just like, you know what? I don't need a manager. I don't need an agent. I don't need any PR people. Like, I'm just gonna have this 1-800 number, and if someone wants to work with me, they can call it. And if I feel like doing it, I'll do it. And that was that's really Bill Murray in a nutshell. You know, he'll work when he's ready to, and that's the way he wants to do things.
So he's really got a very interesting life philosophy. So as you're making this film, this is basically your journey to find meaning in Bill Murray's many unexpected adventures with everyday people, rare, never before seen footage of this comedic icon participating in stories previously presumed to be an urban legend. So he's known to just do weird things like just walk up to somebody, like take a fry off their plate or whisper in someone's ear. No one will ever remember. The philosophy that he has in life is very interesting. And you talk about it in the film. Give everybody kind of like a snapshot of his very interesting life philosophy.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. It's like there are these urban legends where he puts his hand over your eyes and say, no one will ever believe you, you know? And to me, that was my favorite story in Scotland, in St. Andrews, when he went to a college party and did someone's dishes. Like he I feel like a lot of this stuff kind of came from Second City when he studied with Del Close this yes and approach to life. You know, Del Close was a kind of instructor that had people bring improv off the stage. In that early run of Saturday Night Live, people who came from Del Close, came from Second City, very much prescribed to that idea, you know, that yes and to life, and you might live a little bit more enriched life where you connect with these strangers and just have these magical moments. He also studied a little bit of philosophy in France with this guy, G.I. Gurdjieff, who would do these sort of things to wake people up. You know, there's a little bit of audio from Bill in the movie where it said some of these days where he's just asleep at the wheel and he needs these things to kind of wake himself up.
He's kind of like the anti-celebrity. So many of our celebrities now are so filtered. And this is somebody who doesn't have all the bells and whistles, the entourages, the publicists. He's just somebody who lives his day-to-day life and happens to be this iconic comedic star who doesn't need all of the fancy things that come with celebrity.
In the Twitter and Facebook and Instagram world where like these celebrities get to talk to you and give their opinions, it's like there is this mystery of Bill because he doesn't give that out. And, you know, it's a generational thing. There was no Twitter or social media when he kind of came up and therefore never really wanted to kind of adapt into that world. Like, I don't know if a comedian could be like Bill Murray nowadays, you know, or could grow like Bill without that, you know? But yeah, for someone to be on the outside there, not tweeting and not sending pictures of whatever they ate that day, it's weird for someone. It's almost like a weird thing. So he's that unicorn in today's world. Like we had Peter Farrelly in our movie explain that when he's going to these things, he's not performing. He's not going to someone's house party and going, look at me, I'm Bill. You know, he's sitting on the couch watching TV with you. And that's what's funny about it, because he doesn't draw awareness to himself. He just likes to exist in your world.
I can't tell you how much I enjoyed it. I think you did such a great job, and I'm encouraging everybody to check it out. It's on Netflix, and you can also get it on Amazon. I want to get the Amazon one because I do want to see all the extra scenes. What else are you working on, and how can people find you?
I'm finishing up this new movie. It's a little bit more serious. It's called Waldo and Weed. It's about my friend whose son had eye cancer at 6 months old, and they started using cannabis oil to help kind of like counteract the results of the chemotherapy. And Instagram is my main social media thing, but I'm on the Facebook and all that stuff. It's just really my name, Tommy Avallone, Avallone3 on Instagram. And I don't think I have letters on the other ones.
Hiring used to be so hard. Multiple job sites, stacks of resumes, a confusing review process. But today, hiring can be easy, and you only have to go to one place to get it done. ZipRecruiter.com/realitylife. ZipRecruiter sends your job to over 100 of the web's leading job boards. But they don't stop just there. With their powerful matching technology, ZipRecruiter scans thousands of resumes to find people with the right experience and invite them to apply to your job. And as applications come in, ZipRecruiter analyzes each one and spotlights the top candidates so you can never miss a great match. ZipRecruiter is so effective that 80% of employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate through the site within the first day. And right now, my listeners can try ZipRecruiter for free at this exclusive web address, ziprecruiter.com/realitylife. That's ziprecruiter.com/realitylife, R-E-A-L-I-T-Y-L-I-F-E, ziprecruiter.com/realitylife. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire.
This episode is brought to you by Saks.com. If you're looking for new style inspiration, Saks.com is the place to go. Saks.com is making it easy for me to shop for the spring with their selection of chic clothes and accessories. Right now, I'm looking at Saks.com so I can find my new going out vibe. I'm looking for a breezy Zimmermann dress for an evening cocktail party. And for my upcoming conference in Los Angeles, I'm looking at bright Chloe blazers because I'm pushing myself to wear more orange and pink. Saks.com will inspire you to shop for everything on your agenda. So find inspiration for your new vibe every day at Saks.com.
Lindsay Lohan's Beach Club is still on MTV. I reviewed it after the season premiere. The show has gone on and the ratings keep tanking. And I'm not surprised why, because Lindsay Lohan is a hot mess. Now, you know that she's been a child model, actress, fashion designer-ish, adjacent, I should say, and singer. And now the quasi-multidimensional Lindsay Lohan adds Beach Club manager to her portfolio. So this docuseries on MTV follows the entrepreneur's return to the spotlight as she launches the Lohan Beach House in Mykonos, Greece. Along with her creative partner and trusted associate, Panos, she leads a hand-picked team of young, ambitious VIP professionals hired to make the club the definition of vacation luxury. Brandon Alvarado is an NYU senior. He's a former intern on my beloved Jenny McCarthy show. He's a member of the Facebook group. And I have to say, for 21 years old, he's a bit of a TV expert. Brandon, welcome to the show.
Thank you. I'm so glad you called me an expert. I am blushing and I'm honored.
So the first thing I have to ask you is this. Lindsay Lohan's trying to reinvent herself as one of those like girl boss, like hashtag girl boss. And do we believe this to be true? Do we believe that this is a beach club that she owns and that she's really friends with this guy, Panos?
I think that she's friends with Panos because she probably met him on a very like wild night out. Like, I truly believe that Lindsay met him like while she was on a bender, but I don't believe she owns the beach club really. Like, I think that her name is on it, but like, I don't think Lindsay owns anything that's there. I don't think she owns the club. I don't think she owns that strange Mini Cooper that she drives around. Like, was she everybody? I don't think she owns any of the clothes. Like, I don't think she owns the villa that she stays at where she guts fish at midnight and serves it to her gay friends. I don't think she owns anything.
I think you're correct. She's also imported a bunch of American bottle servers as VIP hosts. Are these people that are actually successful in the U.S. in their field? Or are these people that were hoping to have a career in either Instagramming or in the nightclub industry?
You know, I think that these are people that definitely want to be Instagram models. I'm sure the breakout star, unfortunately, Brent, would tell you that none of these people are successful besides him. But I'd like to believe that most of these people, especially Brent, are the most hated people at their own jobs back in the U.S.
I would agree with that. And she says she's left her hard partying days behind and instead she's decided to sell the party. Do we think it's possible to be so well known for always being out of it and then to work in the same field where you probably end up on the floor passed out?
No, not at all. I think, you know, listen, if she doesn't seem sober on the show. I didn't need Kayla to scream, "Go keep doing your drugs, Lindsay," for any confirmation. I could see just by looking at Lindsay Lohan that she is not, she doesn't seem sober. What is she on exactly? I've been wondering this every single episode.
When you get down to brass tacks, she's still from Long Island. So it kind of comes and goes. Have we been able to kind of pinpoint what sort of accent that is?
Not at all. I think it's I'm sure she'd be the type to say, and I'm sure she has said this before, that she's the type to just travel the world and she'll pick up sort of any accent that she hears from other people. But it makes zero sense, especially with the sort of smoker voice that she has going on. It sounds insane. Have you figured out where this accent has come from?
I can't. I feel like she would call it the... I feel like she's the kind of person, since she already talks in platitudes, it would be called the universal language. You know what I mean?
Oh, absolutely. I got to tell you, my friend and I used to laugh. This must have been over a year ago when Lindsay Lohan, that accent was first kind of revealed. This might have been almost 2 years ago. And she posts this video, and you have to find this online if you have not seen it. It's Lindsay. She goes, "I am Lindsay Lohan." And then she goes, "Hi, I'm in Dubai and I'm home." And just like, she's very sincere, and the accent was very thick.
"And I am home. And I am home.
And I am home." I want to know more about what she is doing at all times. Like, I really wish on this show that not only were they filming this crew, but I do wish that they had those like cameras up in Lindsay's like very strange, bizarre villa, because we got like the only glimpse of what we saw of Lindsay at home was her at midnight, gutting a fish with her gay guy friends and saying that I cook. And you know what else she does? I have to say this now because I'm going to forget about it, because I'm thinking about her cooking skills. Not only can she gut a fish at midnight, but when she had those people on, this is the other glimpse of Lindsay that we got. She had the balls to say, I'm Italian, and Italian in Italy, in Italian culture, we cook everything. So she takes what I think are tortilla chips or something of the sort and crunches them on top of like burgers that she serves to the people on the boat that's with her. The crew members are on the boat.
Oh my God. What about when she asked the staff to write down their intentions in sort of a mystical spiritual ceremony? And then she said, "I don't have time for people making their own intentions on working with me and branding what my future looks like." So in other words, you may write your dreams, but those dreams better be about me. And then Panos's dreams were just words, gratitude, loyalty. And then he wrote changing the world. Do you think it's possible to change the world when your job is to facilitate servers at a beach club in Europe?
No, I don't think that's possible at all. I mean, I would love to know Lindsay's intentions more, because hers don't make any sense. So like, first of all, Lindsay's like, the best thing that Lindsay does on this show is that she'll just go around saying to people, "This is not your show. This is my show. This is Lindsay Lohan's show, not the Brent show." And she'll just like say that a lot. Like, "This is Lindsay Lohan's show. Oh, you want your own show? Well, it's my show." And she'll say it on camera, like, no problem. But then she'll like, her intentions are bizarre, because she'll say that she wants to create community, but then she says that someone's getting fired, so it's competition. But then she'll go back to saying that this is actually a community and we're here to build each other up, not tear each other down, as she would say. It's hard to understand anyone else's intentions when hers are very unclear.
What was the reason that she would want to get rid of her? Because Kayla has one answer, Lindsay has another. What's the real reason?
Okay, so Kayla comes in from a show I have never seen, I'm not going to lie, called The Challenge. And she is the one person besides Lindsay that's already like been on TV before. So she comes over, and she is immediately coming in hot, saying like, "I'm here to take people's jobs." Like, because Lindsay decides to take a few of the people onto a yacht, including Kayla, who she, at the time, I thought she liked, Kyle, the other new guy, and then Brent, the show's villain. And she's like, "I'm bringing him on because he's causing trouble. So you gotta keep your friends close and your enemies closer," whatever. So Kayla's on the boat. Lindsay, as she's crunching tortilla chips and a burger, overhears Kayla saying that she's here to take other people's jobs. Like, this is a competition. She's here to take other people's jobs. She doesn't care. Like, she just wants to like succeed. And by doing that, she's going to take someone else's job. Because they keep kind of saying that someone's going to get fired. So Kayla's like running with this notion that someone will get fired. So I think Kayla switched into sort of like competition mode. So Lindsay says, "No, we are here to build people up. And we're here to support each other." So Kayla keeps getting mixed messages. And later when the entire staff, they're hanging out at their villa that they're sharing, and Lindsay rolls up in her Mini Cooper with Panos in the middle of the night, she confronts Kayla and eventually just says, in one of the best moments that Lindsay Lohan's ever had, just like yells at her saying like, "Stop cursing at me," or whatever. And then she goes, "You're fired, by the way. Get out." Kayla just goes, "Keep doing your drugs, Lindsay," as she packs her bags in the middle of the night, looking like a goddamn mess, and walking away and getting into a van and flying home.
I mean, that's pretty good. That's pretty good TV. I mean, I got to hand it to Kayla. Let's give this kid a spinoff. Let's give her a beach club. right?
Honestly, it was riveting. It was, I think, more riveting than watching Janita slap Gabby across the face. Not even slap, but like punch her across the face.
Okay, Nico Tortorella. Now, it was said Nico's been in Lindsay's life for a long time. They were engaged before, kind of in a matter-of-fact way. And then in her own confessional, Lindsay says that she was engaged to him. He's fluid sexually. Do we believe that they were actually engaged?
You know, I believe that they had like sort of that, like Britney Spears marriage when she was married for that one night in Vegas. I feel like that was their engagement. Like they were super wasted, got engaged, posted about it. And the next day we're like, what the hell did we just do here?
Yeah, it was pretty amazing. Everybody on the show hates Brent. Do you also hate Brent?
I hate Brent with such a fiery passion. But to be honest, I also hate Sarah. Like, I don't like either of them. Brent is the worst human being in the world. And it's very clear he's putting some of this on for TV. And I almost hate that even more. I don't find it entertaining. I also, every time Brent's on screen, I stare at his, like, completely shaved body.
I know.
And, like,
I
listen,
know.
I'm not just... And I can't judge it too much because like, look who else is doing it. Look at me. I'm doing it as well. But like I stare, like I look at his arms and hands and legs and I stare at them. I can't stop staring at them. Like every time he's on screen.
Well, I'm assuming that part of that is because you know that he's probably a werewolf in real life. So you know what kind of commitment, that kind of commitment it takes to get rid of all of that, right?
Oh, yeah. Brent's the kind of guy that like, truly werewolf, like you will not see any skin. Like if he was like all natural all the time, you would not find any skin. There would be just like entirely hair. He'd look, yeah, like fur.
I feel the same way about Croy on Don't Be Tardy, because he is very, very pale like myself. So when he shows up in every episode with a full-on tan, I feel like he's going against our people. It's like, I don't know who you're fooling. This is not the real body. That's not the real you. In the same way that Brent is not a fully waxed person in his day-to-day life.
Yeah, no, exactly. And Croy is someone who, like, every season on Don't Be Tardy is looking more and more like a beautiful lesbian woman, like, completely morphing himself into the... I just need you to know that the guy that came to Mykonos, who claims he was Nico Tortorella, that guy, I don't know who we saw in the pictures, but like for some reason, he showed up, and I get that he's like a very famous actor on a television show. I get that it was Nico Tortorella, but I'm sorry. The pictures that we saw and the guy who showed up,
two different people.
I was like, who are you? And meanwhile, I feel like Lindsay Lohan's the type that like, if you like presented her as someone, like if I threw a random woman into Mykonos, like she would be like, Oprah, so good to see you. Hug, 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 and kiss, like, she like doesn't get it. Like I don't think Lindsay would be so that girl who like would truly think that like if I showed up in Mykonos, like I could be Nico Tortorella. She'd be like, oh, it's so good to see you.
She's very taken with celebrity. I mean, she has to let you know all the time that she's got Oprah on speed dial. I have to say, I'm assuming that Oprah long since blocked her number, but Lindsay's so out of it she doesn't realize it.
Oh God, yeah. Like she, Lindsay's calling like a random number that's going into like a random Montecito home. and the family has to routinely ask her to stop calling.
I went on to TripAdvisor and I wanted to see some of the reviews of the Lindsay Lohan Beach Club. Are you ready for some of it?
Smart. Yes, yes. I'm so excited.
Okay. New TripAdvisor reviews. Here we go from Lindsay Lohan Beach Club. Just a quick lunch. Not great, but not terrible. Was expensive for just a chicken wrap and two drinks. Waiters were okay, but stare a lot. Chicken was dry and clientele are a bit pretentious. So my favorite part of that was the waiters stare a lot. Do you like to eat somewhere where you feel like the waiters are staring at you?
You know, not exactly. No, I don't love, it's like when the housewives don't eat on camera because their camera's on them. That's how I feel about eating with the staff that's staring at me. It's like, I just would really feel not compelled to eat, drink, or do anything.
I agree. Okay, this one says, unremarkable. Prices were the same as the rest of the island, which is to say, obscene. Waiters asked for, insisted on tips. Hearing English, they presume we are dumb. Okay, and this one's a good one too. Besides the horrible music all day, it was nice. With a horrible soundtrack that ruins your day, you can't leave a better review. Here right now with the worst music ever, worst selection of hip-hop that not even the worst ghetto of Miami you would have to listen to. We came to chill with the vibes of the island on sunbeds, bottle, and then they took turn it into this follow the leaders of the island. So clearly this person might have been wasted when they wrote this, but I do salute them for writing this.
Before we go, I just need you to know that Lindsay Lohan, can you imagine being in a job interview and she has the gall to say, to work here, you need to have a bachelor's degree.
Well, especially since we're not even sure she has like a ninth grade education. I would also assume that during that job interview, she probably has one eyeball open, that she's wearing a muumuu.
No, I think that Lindsay's a type that like wouldn't know the basic math of any sort of any multiplication, anything. I'm sure she could tell you the entire menu at the Ivy in Los Angeles.
That's a good point. That's a good point. Listen, you're fantastic. Where can people track you down?
So you can find me on Twitter at the B Alvarado and on Instagram at the Brandon Alvarado. I'm not that important. I just like, they don't have at Brandon Alvarado anymore. So I just put the in there as if I was somebody, as if I'm Lindsay Lohan. So you can find me there. I'm also in your Facebook group, so we can always chat on there.
The amazing Kate Casey.
I want to thank my great guest this week, Jamie Otis, Tommy Avalone, and Brandon Alvarado. Remember, you've got to subscribe to the show. So go to iTunes, click the subscribe button. Why is this important? Because instead of having to remind yourself on a post-it note or writing on your hand or, I don't know, begging one of your kids to remind you, it just shows up on your phone. It's so easy. So if you could do that and then to also write me a 5-star review, I would so appreciate it. It's so easy to do. I know I say it all the time, but really, it's the easiest thing to do. Also, you can find me on Twitter at Kate Casey. I love to tweet during shows and about shows during the week. You can find me on Instagram at Kate Casey CA. You will see on there my upcoming guests. I am constantly making fun of my family and myself, kind of a window into my life. You can find my website, loveandknuckles.com. And as always, thank you for watching as much television as I do, and catch up next week. With today's distractions and busy schedules, it's easy to lose sight of what's really important to us, the things that we love and appreciate, real moments with family. From cooking homemade meals with family to catching up with a friend over a latte, Dairy Milk helps us savor the moments that matter with the ones that we love. This week, my kids and I made a mermaid cake with royal frosting with Dairy Milk, and we also made a bunch of hot vanillas with Dairy Milk and vanilla powder because a couple of the kids felt under the weather. Milk can transform recipes and help savor moments that matter most. Make the most of the real moments with something the whole family loves, real delicious milk. Head to milklife.com for more.
This episode is brought to you by the effortlessly scrumptious bite of Skinny Pop popcorn. Imagine this: perfectly popped, endlessly delicious kernels. A symphony of just 3 simple ingredients: popcorn, sunflower oil, and a sprinkle of salt. No compromise, just pure snacking freedom. And hey, if you're up for a twist, dive into flavors like zesty white cheddar to sweet and salty kettle. Every bite's a delight, light and oh so tasty. Shop Skinny Pop now.